Thanks for tuning in to the Undercut's review of the 2026 Miami Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, boys. Well, after a five-week hiatus, we're back. And we get a sprint race, the first of three American races. But it seems like nothing's changed, at least by the end of the weekend. We get Kimi winning for the third time in a row. And I think I heard this correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong. But him getting pole was he's only the third person to do it, other than Senna and Schumacher. And he's
to get
the first one,
three. That first poles three consecutively, yeah.
Right. And then he was the first one ever to win his first three consecutive pole, or the first person to get three consecutive poles and then win those three consecutive races as well. Wow.
So,
you got there in the end.
So he was the first to get his first three poles consecutively after Senna and Schumacher. He's the third driver to get their first three wins consecutively after Damon Hill and Mika Häkkinen, but he's the first one to do those three things at the same time.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
The first one to convert their first three poles to wins in three consecutive races.
And if he gets any kind of pole / win in Canada, then he's just on his own in this streak of four, is it? Or how far did Schumacher and Senna take this?
Well, they they didn't win three in a row, but I guess he could continue the pole streak.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The pole streak and on the win streak, did Mika Häkkinen and Damon Hill win their first four races in a row? I don't know.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. It's been lost to the annals of time. We stopped writing stuff down.
That's right.
I'm sure they'll tell us. I mean, Kimi, is it too soon to say? He's the real deal, right?
You have to say he is a contender. He's proven himself to be a contender now. I think he's exceeded everyone's expectations this
100%.
Year. 100%. You know, Australia was kind of what we thought we were going to get with Kimi this year. But in the three races since, he's proven that he's got what it takes to win. Because, you know, it wasn't that he went out and the race was his. Granted, there are things that happened in each of those races that meant the race came to him, but they're the opportunities that you have to take if you're going to challenge for the title. And he's done it, and he's stamped his name on the season. And I'm not saying that George is not the favorite anymore, because it's a long season. And with experience comes the ability to absorb some of the stress at the sharp end of the season. But it's definitely a fight now.
Oh, yeah, big time. Absolutely. I mean, I got to put Kimi as the favorite now. Like, George isn't getting it done. Kimi is. But you're right. I mean, Piastri looked the same way last year, right? When he took a nice lead going into mid-season, and then he just had a wobble of like three, four races where he lost concentration, was pushing too hard, you know, whatever it might be, a bit of bad luck. So yeah, a long way to go. But
Vegas has Kimi as the favorite now, +120 to win, which is pretty,
pretty
confident in him.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, but he can't get off the line though, can he? He can't start his car.
Makes him look better at this point. I feel like,
but it's like it doesn't need to.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, you don't need to into the first corner anymore. That's 1990s talk or early 2000s. These days, overtaking all over the place, it's a different game. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
consistently bad, right? Sprint race and main race, he went backwards.
Yeah, I think I was listening to the race podcast and they were talking about how it's been different things every time. Like, they gave him the wrong level to pull the clutch to in one race, and in another one, he did it incorrectly. So it's been his fault. It's been the team's fault. It's been a whole bunch of other stuff. But at the end of the day, you've got to get off the line. And it's not going to always be this way, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's going to be that there's going to become a point in the season where his bad starts are going to come home to roost, right? Yeah. Probably
sure.
George taking it.
Yeah.
But I think McLaren have, you know, this has been a bit of a statement of intent from McLaren this weekend. I think Lando was definitely in a position to win. I think they were a little conservative with their strategy and they were kind of holding out for rain that never came. And they stayed out too long, got undercut, and that was the race for Kimi, right?
Yeah.
Not to say that Kimi wouldn't have got past Lando, that's why we race. But there was definitely, I think Lando after the race was definitely of the opinion that the race was there to be won. And they kind of lost it a little through their strategy call.
Yeah. I mean, you must have been happy, Jason, with the sprint performance, right? I mean,
I was happy with both.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I would have preferred that McLaren had won, but from where we looked in the beginning of the season, I mean, we looked fourth best, you know,
yeah.
maybe. I'll take it. And yeah. I mean, it seems like the field has shrunken quite a bit during yeah. that break.
Well, the storyline is that McLaren and Ferrari brought upgrades. I'm not sure about Red Bull, but McLaren and Ferrari brought upgrades to Miami. But the Mercedes didn't? Is that right?
That's
Mercedes
correct.
Brought a few tweaks, but right. their main upgrade package is coming in Canada.
All right. So that's
the big upgrade package was Ferrari. They were the ones that brought the most. It didn't really work.
Yeah, it didn't quite. They're still, I mean, the drivers are really battling that car, I feel. The car's fighting them. But the performance gain for McLaren is heartening. They're moving in the right direction for sure. They've closed the gap to Mercedes, but then what are Mercedes going to bring to Canada, I guess, is the next question. Are they going to pull back ahead again?
And McLaren have done that consistently, really, the last few years, is bringing a solid upgrade package in Miami, and it's worked each time.
Yeah.
So it's on brand, it's true to form. The interesting point, like you said, is did they capitalize enough this weekend, given what is going to come in Canada? Which has been a good George circuit. But also, Kimi took his first pole there last year and he finished on the podium. So I think it's going to be...
Kimi didn't get pole there last year, did he? Because he just got his first three.
He got sprint pole. Was it a sprint race last year?
But he did get a sprint pole last year. I just can't remember.
I think it was Canada.
Go All on. Right.
Edit... sufficiently to make me sound brilliant and informed. But anyway, long story short is Mercedes were good there last year. George is good there. It's a must-win race for George, isn't it?
Oh, in Canada? I mean, he's got to do something. I mean, he's just got to beat...
Is it there already?
I mean, he needs to be... He should be... He wants to be ahead of Antonelli, that's for sure. I mean, we're going to assume that being ahead of Antonelli means probably winning the race at the moment. But yeah, he's got to be closer to Antonelli or ahead, more competitive.
I mean, Max looked incredible during this race, given the one moment where he spun out. I mean,
yeah, he nearly threw it all away at the beginning, right? He spun on the second or third corner, effectively.
Saved it in the way only Max can.
Yeah, and nobody tagged him, amazingly.
That's the thing, though. He's like, he saved it, but no one hit him.
Yeah.
Which was
almost unbelievable.
The bigger miracle, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that was crazy. And then, oh no, it was Hamilton and Colapinto that came together, wasn't it, on the first lap. So there was a bit of chaos out there. But yeah, Verstappen rode his luck for sure. But yeah, he did look good. In the Red Bull.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did have upgrades coming. They did bring an upgrade package, which looks like it might go the way of every other Red Bull upgrade, where it makes the car something that Max can really put at the front, but increase the gap to his teammate. You know, we went from being like quarter of a second, you know, to a third of a second. Suddenly, this weekend, it's gone to 3/4 of a second to Hadjar. So, is this kind of form coming back? I hope it's not. I like Hadjar, but I'm just kind of throwing out these, you know, these thoughts in terms of, I'm, you know, people will probably read a lot into it, and I'm trying not to. So, but on the subject of Hajar, he's got to be a little annoyed that his race ended on lap five in that way, tagging the barrier and into the wall.
Kind of made it seem like him and Pierre came together just because their crashes were so close together, but they weren't.
They were completely unrelated, which was kind of odd. Yeah. But yeah, Hajar was not a happy guy after he, you know, it was all his fault, right? It was his mistake, and he was not pleased about it. As, you know, banging on the steering wheel for like what felt like about a minute and a half.
Yeah. And George had contact early on too, didn't he? Wasn't it pretty early on? I guess it wasn't, because he finished the race with it plowing through the finish line with the front wing dragging on the ground.
Yeah, he collided with both Leclerc and Verstappen at various points, I think, in the race, but ended up hitting penalties.
Going across the line with that front wing, that was damaged from the last hairpin contact with Charles.
Yeah.
Is that what Charles got disqualified for? Was for that moment? I didn't see what the actual
he got a 20-second penalty for repeatedly leaving the track. Similar to Antonelli in the sprint race, I think. And Verstappen got a 5-second penalty for the same thing as well, I think. So, but it didn't change his position at P5.
With Leclerc, it was, you know, last lap, just trying to boot it to try and make up the time and try and make a move, but he gave it too much and spun. He didn't pick it up quite as cleanly as Verstappen did, and he tagged the wall with his left front, which meant he couldn't turn right. So he was having to straight line things as much as possible. Fortunately, he got through, he got round, but those left-handers, so those right-handers were not very easy for him.
Right, yeah.
Including the last corner where he was super sheepish, and that was when obviously he got overtaken on the outside by Verstappen. I mean, he was academic at the end anyway, because the 20 seconds put him back into eighth spot. But I think it was encouraging from Ferrari that they were up there to an extent. It would have been interesting to see what Hamilton would have done. Lewis was behind all weekend on Charles, but obviously the damage that he got with the contact with Colapinto meant that, you know, he was disadvantaged by quite a bit because of the loss of downforce. In an otherwise fantastic weekend for Franco, right? I think it was one of his most complete weekends.
The team looked great. The team did look great. Pierre hadn't crashed out. It would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I'd have liked to have seen, given how good Franco was on Sunday, well, throughout the whole weekend, to see when he would have shaken out if Pierre hadn't been taken out of the race by an unfortunate case where it seems that Liam Lawson had a gearbox failure, which meant that there was no engine braking. That's what caused him to understeer or lock up and go into the side of Pierre, put him into the tires in what was a kind of a nasty rollover accident.
He flipped the car, didn't he? That's crazy. Whenever you see a car go upside down, it's never good. But Colapinto ended up P7, best result of his career. I mean, we were banging on him for last season because he never got a point, right? He was barely even sniffing a point.
Yeah, but hopefully this kind of helps him with the confidence and gets him pep back in his step, because last week he was down in Buenos Aires doing a show run down like the big boulevard there in downtown. Thousands and thousands of people showed up, which obviously put him in a good frame of mind heading into the race. Hopefully, you know, I think he'd probably rather that Canada was this coming weekend rather than having to wait longer than I even thought it was going to be. But hopefully this is a turning point for his season. And I think, you know, Alpine, solid weekend for them, Gasly's result in the race aside.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, kind of, they're sort of shooting for best of the rest outside the top four teams, right? Alpine. And then Williams, Sainz and Albon had like a solid performance in ninth and tenth. So double points, the lowest you can get, but still both in the points is...
Both in the points, they brought a lot of new parts. I don't know necessarily that they were upgrades, but there were a lot of new parts that they had on the car, which I think contributed to taking some of the weight out. and you take some of the weight off. Obviously, that makes you faster. So, you know, not where they want to be, but better than where they were. I think they've taken a step forward. Alpine have taken a step forward. Haas, unfortunately, as is typically the case, start off with a really good car, but they're getting outgunned a little bit because they're a much smaller team and don't have the capacity to develop in season as much as well as the other teams. So they kind of took a bit of a step back, unfortunately, with when did Ollie Bearman finish 11th, was it? And oh, yeah. Ocon a couple of more spots behind.
Yeah.
And the Audi team had a disappointing weekend as well, because Nico looked pretty fast, but
their engine just keeps blowing up and having all sorts of failures, which are execution problems with the team, which is not ideal. Obviously, they've got a new racing director, team principal guy, Alan McNish, used to race in F1 with Toyota back in 2000, 2001. When Toyota came in. He was a driver for the first season, maybe two. Obviously, then he went into management. He's been with Audi for a while, running, endurance stuff. And he was the team principal of their Formula E team. So he knows what he's doing, but this will be a test for him on the next, at the next level for Formula One. But I think everyone's kind of happy that he's there because he's, by all accounts, a good dude.
And the less we talk about Aston Martin, the better, right? Were they even any kind of relevance? They got lapped in the end, I think.
Yeah, they're now behind Cadillac, I think, pretty much. Although it's tough to tell because you've got, on one hand, you've got Alonso in the Aston Martin and you've got Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin. You've got Checo Perez, who's doing a great job. The Cadillac and Bottas is somewhat anonymous, so you don't really know relative pace what's actually happening there. But I think Cadillac have done
they're technically a
job. Yeah. But Aston, Gray, I think that they're just pouring all their efforts into a B spec car that won't come in until sometime probably around about Spa.
Yeah, I think I think they all finished together, but sort of interspersed with each other. Alonso, then Perez, then Stroll, then Bottas bringing up the rear. But you got the best, the rest, and then the worst, I guess, of those guys fighting it out at the bottom.
Cadillac being technically ahead of Aston Martin on the chart, even if they both have 0 points, that's even a win at this point.
I mean, you're assuming that Cadillac's supposed to be slowly improving as a brand new team. Aston, I mean, I don't know how much money Lance Stroll has tipped into this experiment, I guess you should call it, over the past few years, but it has not worked. What's that?
Lance hasn't put any money in.
Oh, not Lance, sorry. Lawrence, sorry. Yeah, his dad, Lawrence. Yeah, how much money he's tipped into it, but it's not working out. The Adrian Newey effect that I was predicting many years ago, it absolutely did not show up.
Yeah, I mean, just
feels like many years ago, but it was really, 4 months ago?
Yeah, but I was, I thought it was
18 months ago, right? They announced 18 months and there's going to be fanfare. It's like they've got a brand new factory. They've got all this money from Lawrence Stroll. They've got Adrian Newey. It's change of regulation. It was all signs pointing towards Aston Martin being, really trying to make a push into the top three, make it a top four title fight. And they're just way off the back. I mean, everyone in that team just must be beside themselves, really.
March 1st, 2025 was his starting date. So,
yeah, but it was known
14 months.
Yeah. That was when he was allowed to start working, I think.
Yeah.
That shine is that gone, that magic that aura that he had around him of just only building winning cars season after season.
Does that taint his whole entire career?
I mean, what have you done for me lately? Humans, we look at your most recent performances and tend to judge you on that. So unfortunately, it's not, unless he pulls something miraculous out of the hat. It's
the Bill Belichick effect.
It's a little bit. But he's not crying. Well, he's crying into his millions at home. I'm not too worried for him.
No, but the season isn't over. Like, say, if they are just they're not bothering to put anything on the car. They're just, I think they're really just focusing on basically a whole new car by mid-season as much as they can. The good thing is both cars finished. The vibration issues that they had in testing at the beginning of the season where they couldn't complete 30 laps, that's clearly been addressed. So that's a step in the right direction if you want to take some positives out of it. They've just got to get the performance where it needs to be, because right now it's just not. How much of that is Honda? How much of that is the car itself? Who knows? Yeah. But they've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. He's just like the George Steinbrenner of Formula One, essentially. Maybe he just needs to let go of control and just take a step back, you know?
Well, they took away, they talk about Adrian Newey, right? They took away his...
Lawrence.
Oh, Lawrence. Oh, yeah, for sure. But I mean, I don't know how much control he has on day-to-day stuff. But yeah, I mean, he's got to be shouting at a lot of people all the time, you know, the amount of money he's tipped in. But yeah. What about moving on from that? I saw a comment from Lando. I think he was being interviewed and he basically said, the tweaks they've made to sort of the battery deployment and the engine, the power deployment is a little bit better, but he ultimately drew a line and just said, get rid of the battery. Did you hear that? And what are your thoughts?
Get rid of the battery.
I mean, I guess he wants to go back to, he doesn't like 50% of the power, you know, or whatever the split is now, how they've tweaked it. It makes it sort of artificial and overtaking and power V8s, management. Right? V8s? Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, Mohammed bin Salam endearing himself to the F1 faithful, right? With comments that they're going to go to a V8 by 2030, 2031, because seemingly the FIA, no one does. The FIA saying that they have the power to do it without the manufacturer's backing in 2030 or 2031. I didn't read too deeply into what the legalities were behind that, but I think that would definitely be in a step in direction. Everyone has been like thrilled that someone said that, and it's maybe a possibility. But yeah, I mean, the change that they made to the rules, I think, did make things slightly better. But it was still, you know, 3/4 of the way down the straight, the speed was decreasing. Granted, it wasn't 60 or 70 kilometers per hour like it was in China. Maybe it was 20, which was kind of better. But it was still, you know, this rule set to me is just everything that's wrong with F1. They hoard themselves out to Audi to get them to come in. And this is what we've got to live with, certainly for this year, but hopefully next year they'll change things and take the power distribution down and be able to increase fuel rates and make it maybe 60-40 or better.
They're messing with something they don't know how, they're sort of testing in real life, right? They don't understand how it's going to impact the racing. So I guess they're trying to improve it.
Well, everyone was saying for a long time that this was going to happen. They didn't kind of, you know, the whole energy starvation and not being able to get down the straights and having to recover energy and taking away from the racing. Everyone's been saying this for like the last year and a half, but F1 didn't listen. They were like, oh, you guys are smart, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And there's too many yes men around to say, guys, are you sure this is really a good idea? And for F1 to listen.
Yeah. I mean, we are getting a lot more overtakes though, right? We are getting closer racing. You know, there's drivers that seem to be there or thereabouts every race now, right? Nobody's winning by 40 seconds or a minute or anything like that, like Verstappen was doing a couple of years ago. So
yeah. What was it in the cool down room? It was Piastri was saying that he got, I couldn't quite hear what he was saying, but I think he was like, he got past Charles Leclerc and then he was full throttle and Charles Leclerc just went straight by him.
Yeah. That's the weird thing. It's weird to watch that because it's hard to predict as you're watching it, which car is going to break first, or they're overtaking, not necessarily by outbreaking somebody, by out accelerating somebody, which is, you can do it. But it, I don't know, it just looks weird from seeing the old...
That's not who's the bravest. That's not who's the last on the brakes.
Yeah.
It's who feathered the throttle 3 corners ago.
Yeah. Yeah. just right. Yeah. I mean, you can out drag somebody if you take a better line through the corner. But again, when you watch the races, you can kind of see that setting up. This sort of comes out of nowhere. All of a sudden, one of the cars just boosts past the other. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
I will say, I agree with everything that you guys said, but it is, for what we have, it is cool to see overtakes happening in places that we haven't seen in the past. So that's cool. Just, you know, taking the silver lining point of view, being able to see different things happen at different parts of the track is cool. And it was interesting to see the battle, at least in the beginning, but it does seem to teeter out just like it did with any other formula in the past. Towards the end of the race, they might be closer, but there's still not much passing happening in the last half of the race, at least at the
moment. I think that the obviously DRS was a reduction in the downforce, which meant it could only ever be used on straights, which meant that all the overtakes had to happen on straights under that rule set. I think it is definitely a step forward that the boost is from the battery and it can be used anywhere during the lap. I think that's a big upgrade. I mean, yeah, it means you got a bit of extra power. If they could only just get rid of the power starvation that results from the whole formula, then if you can get to a position where there's battery power available in certain if you're within a second of the car in front, then, and you don't pay a price for using it, then I think that we're going to be in a much better position. But I don't think that's a this year thing. Maybe they can get there next year if they, because the big thing with upping the engine power by increasing the fuel flow is that you need a larger fuel tank, and obviously these cars are built, so you can't really change the fundamentals of that kind of design effort in the middle of the season. But hopefully for next season they can do something about that.
We're
talking more about power and batteries and less about tires, right? Like, is tire management
tires?
Right. I mean,
unless you're Charles Leclerc and you've torched your rears and you spin on the last lap.
Right. I guess so. But I guess before the rule changes, they were driving to the tires, right? You couldn't burn your tires up. So maybe you still weren't. You were pushing the car as much as you could, but you couldn't burn up your tires. Now it's more about power management. I mean, is it one has been replaced with another? I don't know. But I guess
yes. I mean, when did Max pit for that final stop? It was pretty early on, right?
Lap 10.
Lap 10, he went the whole way.
Yeah,
because
but he went backwards because he had to look after his tires.
Yeah.
The tires would not have lasted if he'd been pushing in the same way as everyone else was, who pitted like 15 laps after him.
Yeah. So I guess it comes into play in some circumstances, but that's only because he really, how long was the race? 57 laps or whatever? So
57,
47 laps on one set of tires.
But a lot of trying to get, a lot of overtaking on Max's part. He had very sharp elbows. A few people were complaining about some of the moves that were being made, a bit of clattering of wheels. But, rubbing your racing, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But like if people didn't take maneuvering action away from him, like he would crash. That's the thing that I don't like about the way Max drives. I understand that he stays within the rules because he stays on the track, but it's because the other driver is getting out of the way so they don't crash out of the race. It's not
like,
right.
When he overtook Lawson, he just barged him off the track. He went all four wheels off the track as well.
Yeah.
So it'd be because people let him do it, right? It's like sometimes you just gotta crash,
I guess,
and let him know that you're not gonna be barged out of the way. I mean, you'll be out of a race. Hopefully, it's if I was here, I am Formula One driver Nick. If I was in 11th place and Max Verstappen was trying to barge me out of the way, it's like if I'm not getting any points, all right, let's just crash. And then he'll know not to do it again. But I'm not going to yield.
Well, Ocon tried that, right? And then Max threatened to beat him up in the garage. Isn't what happened?
that's pretty standard. We've seen that we've seen drivers running up and down the pit lane many times trying to confront others. Schumacher comes to mind. Senna tried it.
It's been too long.
It's been too long.
We need a pit lane scuffle. They're too,
too polished. They're too corporate.
Yeah, too friendly with each other, buying each other lunch and stuff like that, hanging out, being friends on their scooters around the paddock.
At the end of the year, when they have their like dinner where all the drivers get together, one of them just needs to swing at the guy next to him. And then the season after, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. You don't have one of those characters, do we? You don't have... Who's the angriest of all the drivers? I don't know.
I mean, Hadjar was sitting in the steering wheel pretty
good. Oh, Hadjar. Yeah, Hadjar's a fiery guy.
I don't know who that would be. Ollie's super nice. Like,
yeah.
Charles is super nice.
It's easier to say who's the nicest driver than the angriest.
Right? Yeah. Max is the biggest dick on the...
I guess.
In the field. Well... I guess
Lance Stroll should do it. Lance Stroll should step up and be the bad guy. He should be the villain because his dad is basically a Bond villain.
Yeah, he can't
lean into it better because, like, no one likes him. So we should hate him and appreciate him more.
That's right. He's got the least to lose. I don't know how much he would have to do to actually get fired by his team, right? So he's most secure in his seat potentially.
Yeah, but didn't we say a couple of races ago, maybe this is all just a cunning plan by Adrian Newey to make the car terrible and force Lance to just throw in the towel and walk away and then produce a masterpiece next
year? There you go. Oh, this is how conspiracy theories get started. I mean, you're talking sense to me, Nick. I like it.
I'm not even sure Lance even wants to be driving there anymore. You know, at this point, dad's probably just invested so much money. He's kind of like, you know, in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, when they're in the castle and the son, all he wants to do is sing, right? But his dad won't let him do it. That's what Lance needs. Newey is Lancelot who's going to come in and save him and get him out of there.
You just came up with that on the spot, Jason. That's a great, good metaphor there. Simile. I don't know what it is.
I don't need it. But... Sure. Well, I guess, I mean, that brings us to Coops.
Oh, yes. Coops F1. So I did put the result in, and initially, before Leclerc got his dropped two spots, which shuffled the pack a little bit, we had a near perfect prediction.
I saw that.
Spunk for Milk was the top scorer. It had 340 points initially, which is close to the, I think, 420 is the theoretical maximum. But with the Charles dropping back a couple of places and shuffling around, still top score with 300 this week. Absolute Racing 273. And then overall fight to win keeps the top spot with 844 points, and Formula E pops up to second. I think I managed to move up back up a little bit, so I'm 24th now.
Yeah, Charles helped me out quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, but I got to scroll. Oh no, 62nd for you, Jason. Not bad. Is it Nick that I'm digging for more? Is it?
Yeah, go digging for me.
Have you changed your team at all since the start of the season?
No, I haven't put any picks in since the first race. I keep forgetting especially now because it's so long. I just forgot, and so I've got a long way to claw back, but I will do it.
Yeah, you'll do it. Yeah, you're still believing. You're still believing in the Ferraris up in third and fourth.
Yeah, and I think that no one really believes in the Ferraris anymore. Their small turbos getting them off the line, but that's very flattering.
Yeah, nobody's talking about that anymore. Yeah, the amazing starts by the Ferraris. As Kimi has shown, the start is not that important.
So
just build a faster car. Yeah.
Well, I was all sold in on the McLarens as soon as the sprint race was over. I had Lando first and Oscar second to win the Grand Prix. So
that's all you were on the edge of making that prediction anyway. So that's all you needed to lock it in.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now another mini break until Canada. Yeah. Unfortunately, a little 3-week gap. But, you know, at some point the season's going to get going where it's going to be race after race after race, right?
But I guess that's how it started. We had such a long break in between those that, that back to back to back.
Yeah, and the rumors are always still swirling about whether they're going to try and throw Bahrain or Saudi in at the end of the season,
right?
To like a quadruple header after Vegas. I don't know if that's going to work out, but it, you know, I think they should just cut it and just get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Well, anything else you guys think we missed?
No.
We got most of it.
Oh, so actually just looking at the schedule, Nick. So the weekend I'm visiting you is Monaco weekend.
Monaco. Yeah.
Nice. Monaco. All right. Excellent.
So no Maybe. Race that weekend.
Huh?
So no race that weekend.
Just a qualifying session.
Just, yeah. We'll just play golf. We'll just play golf anyway. We all know what's going to happen after qualifying.
He has to give up the corner. I had to nose ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the Undercuts review of the 2026 Miami Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, and join us next time for our review of the 2026 Canadian Grand Prix. We'll see you there.